This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome back, Lucha Lushes. This is Lucha Undead, Get to Know the PTBN PWO. And this week we have, this is kind of the big dog when it comes to half of that for the PWO. This is Loss Charles, the owner of the PWO board. Loss, how are you doing tonight?
Doing great. Thanks for having me. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing fantastic. I'm really excited to kind of talk to you about some of this stuff, especially, the starting of the board and all that. And Adrian, always as my co-host. I don't have a special guest co-host tonight. So, Adrian, how are you doing tonight?
Doing good, Tim. Doing good. Thank you for asking.
Fantastic. So, to start it out, usually I like to ask, are you now or have you ever been a member of the PWO board? But that seems a bit redundant here tonight with Loss. So, Loss, when did you first join the PWO board?
Last week, actually. I'm still lurking. No, I joined in 2007 when it first launched. So the board, should I just give a little history or?
Yeah.
Are you now? No. When did you join the PWO board officially?
The first day it existed. So I think I may have been the first person. It was either me or Good Helmet. I'm not sure which, but the board was a spinoff. So there was a previous board, which was not even, Will and I, Good Helmet and I, were just members of it. It was New Millennium Blues, and that was kind of like, your typical all-purpose board that has a music folder and a sports folder and a comics folder and all that stuff, and wrestling was just one of many, and there you go. Like most wrestling boards that have all those other folders, the wrestling folder got all the traffic, and the other folders were just kind of a place where people just said whatever. But the problem was, at least from our point of view, that And we've even seen this a little bit lately on Pro Wrestling Only, like the struggle to make PWO Pro Wrestling Only. It's a struggle. And back then, we didn't even have that concept yet. But, there was a current events folder, and that was coloring the wrestling talk a little bit more than either one of us preferred. So we decided to go in a different direction, which the people who were running the board at the time didn't really agree with, and they were wanting to shut the board down anyway. So we took, which I think it's still there in read-only mode, but we took like the wrestling folder basically and made a read-only archive of that and then just moved that to our server and then launched Pro Wrestling Only in January of 2007. So we actually just passed our 10-year anniversary a couple of months ago.
Oh, wow. I didn't even really realize it was that long ago from the talks. People, they have kind of hazy because Pete was, the last interview we did, and he was talking about New Millennium Blues actually came up, and he didn't even really mention that it was kind of moved over 10 years ago. That's quite some time. And as you talked about, there's maybe some newer concerns, especially with the political climate of it being pro wrestling only. It is kind of interesting that the other parts of the board, the other sections that are meant for general talk, don't get any traffic, but then people want to talk about the general talk in the wrestling section of the board, right? But from the start, it was pretty strict. This is pro wrestling only board. And it's kind of stayed that way. That's the name, that's the thing. And is there a conscious effort, you think, to continue to go that way? Or how do you feel about a little bit more general conversation slipping in?
Yeah. I do think that there is. Yes, I do think there's a conscious effort to keep it pro wrestling only. But I also think that maybe what pro wrestling only means now isn't what it meant 10 years ago, just because the world changes and the people who are here, who are posting every day, by and large, are not the same people who were here and posting every day 10 years ago. So the things that people want to talk about are not necessarily the same things. And I think the things that are important in culture and the things that are important in wrestling are not the same either. I mean, wrestling has even gone through a lot of changes during that time. I mean, Chris Benoit killed his family. That's the big one that happened about 6 months after we launched the board. And as you would imagine, that had a pretty big impact on everything. And then, you know, there have been a few other substantial events, you know, Linda McMahon running for office and WWE really becoming more of like a playground for advertisers and taking more of the PG route and just playing it safe a lot more, trying to rehab their image. The rise of indies, the rise of streaming. So you've seen a lot of changes in wrestling. New Japan and Japanese wrestling actually making a comeback when it seemed like in the latter half of the 2000s, people weren't really as much into the Japanese scene anymore. We've seen changes in technology. We've seen changes in wrestling. And then, you know, the societal changes that go with that have happened as well. So, yeah, I mean, so maybe I think if wrestling is going to reflect society, which it always has, it did, you know, in the 70s and 80s, and it does now, then you're just even talking about pro wrestling only, you're going to have some of that. The question is, where do you draw the line? And I think we're still kind of figuring that out.
I guess it's a constant ebb and flow on what pro wrestling only even means. But
really quick, what office did Linda McMahon run for? That sounds interesting to me.
She ran for Senate in 2010, and she ran in Connecticut, and then she ran again in 2012.
Ah, how did that turn out?
Yeah.
She got it both times.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, she's literally in the Senate right now? Or
yeah, she's in the Senate, and she is serving in both seats for Connecticut. So,
yes.
Yeah. What?
She's both the junior and the senior senator of Connecticut.
How have I not heard about this?
Small business administrator.
How have I not heard about this? That's kind of crazy.
Because it's not real.
Oh. Well, hey, I did watch a pretty famous wrestling match that ended in November and culminated in January. I think most of the country watched that. So that was that was interesting. That was an interesting wrestling show, huh? it's ongoing. It's going to go for at least 4 years, as far as we know.
Yeah, I guess it will officially be the longest wrestling match, although maybe some footage of Antonio Inoki can prop up of him doing a 5-year wrestling match.
Yeah.
sorry.
But Loss, as we talked about it there, I got taken aback for a second. And you know, sometimes they talk about if you say the same word over and over again, it loses its meaning, right? PWO, Pro Wrestling Only, that's the name of the board. But when you say in the context that it's pro wrestling only and it's a message board, it like dinged in my head for a second. Oh, yeah, it's supposed to be pro wrestling. Because pro wrestling only has become synonymous with a culture now, more than just meaning that this is a board where you talk about pro wrestling only. How do you feel about the culture that has kind of, I guess, I don't know, organically cropped up on PWO? Because it does have a certain reputation online for what's talked about and how it's talked about there.
Well, I mean, by nature, I'm a pretty easygoing person, and I hate that it's divisive, but I acknowledge that it is. I think that's because, I mean, I really don't think, I mean, I think if you honestly just look at what we talk about at the board, you really do have people representing the standard points of view that you see everywhere. So, I mean, you know, people talk about how contrarian we are, you know, as a collective. And I don't think it's so much that. I think it's that you have people that are willing to say things that are contrary to the general consensus. But you do have people that are there that are agreeing with the consensus. And sometimes they're even in the majority. It's just that people notice more when someone says something that is different from, I guess, the herd mentality. So as a result, then, you know, people look at pro wrestling only, oh, they're just trying to be different or just trying to antagonize, or, you know, they hate everything, or they hate all modern wrestling, or they like Mark Henry just because they want to be different. And that's not at all the case. I mean, I think if you look around, you're just going to see, you know, so many different opinions. I mean, I think, you know, if you're a wrestling fan who likes Tanahashi, and if you're a wrestling fan who likes I'm trying to think of some other guys that are popular right now. Chris Hero, if you're a wrestling fan who likes AJ Styles. I mean, you know, I'm just trying to think of some of the guys that pretty much everyone agrees are great workers right now. Okada. I mean, you can go to PWO and you can find praise for those guys. So I mean, so I hate that it is divisive. At the same time, though, I mean, I'm very happy with the board that we created. I don't think there's anything quite like it online in terms of going as in depth. I mean, we have individual threads for probably over 15,000 matches, and I don't think there's any other board anywhere on the internet that can say that. I mean, it took us years to build that. So, I mean, it's not like we did that, you know, just one day because we were bored. So, and that's a credit to everyone that posts there, not just to one person or a small group of people. But, yeah, I mean, I don't like when someone says something where they're disagreeing with, like, the generally accepted wisdom, and someone says, oh, stop trying to be so PWO or whatever, because I don't really like that. But I do like the board. I mean, in a way, I do take it as a compliment, even though it annoys me, just because, okay, well, I guess everything has a place, you know, and that's what I want.
Right. And you know, I get guests on this show, even though it is, you know, titled the way that it is, that are outside of that PWO bubble all the time. And when I, you know, they're not familiar with PWO at all, which happens, the way that I describe it will be, you know, oh, it's the place where, you know, the popular opinion is that Kurt Angle and Shawn Michaels are terrible and Buddy Rose and the Barbarian are top 10 all-time workers. And when I'm talking to you and, you know, you're one of the first guys that started the board, and then also Will, that I don't feel like those opinions reflect you guys at all. And so it's like to say those are the opinions of this board, or kind of explain it that way, is kind of interesting when, you know, the people who started the board, that's not the way that they think. So it didn't, it's like, it's kind of great that you guys don't influence the conversation. You personally don't try to influence the conversation beyond what it is. But I mean, when I give that explanation, obviously I give more in depth and say, not necessarily everyone believes that, but it's kind of the place where those thoughts were talked about originally, where it was accepted that you could even say something like that. Cause I think a lot of other boards, you can't get away with saying Shawn Michaels wasn't very good. You know, I just think that there's not a lot of wrestling communities where that conversation gets a lot of purchase. But if someone who's not familiar with the board asks you, or is like, oh, I'm not familiar, how would you describe it?
I would just say that it's democratic in the sense that, you know, if you have something to say and you're coming at it earnestly, meaning that it's obvious that you're not just trolling, but that you have a genuine point to make, and, you know, you can explain it in a way that makes sense, then even if it does sound outlandish on the surface, people will hear it. And I think that's always been the case, and that's still the case today. So that's what I would say. It's just, it's extreme democracy.
Well, yeah, and I really appreciate it, because I feel like I can say anything, and and if I really believe it, you know, it's not going to get shit on if I have something to say. But I also feel like I can't just get away with kind of espousing whatever I want, without people kind of calling it out, which is, it's kind of nice in some ways to have a place where you know that you're going to get agreement and kind of dissension on any topic, so you can see it from both sides. Because I don't know about you, but, you know, my politics are what they are, but I also like to listen to the dissenting opinion so that I can know, well, maybe I'm not completely right. Maybe I'm biased. Maybe I see it this way because of an inherent, you know, just something about my upbringing or me as a person. And so I truly appreciate that. But do you think that, as you said, it's extreme democracy. Like, in general, do you enjoy that concept, extreme democracy? Do you have other kind of hobbies or things that you have opinions on that you also kind of go out of your way to hear both sides of the issue?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, politically, I'm pretty left-wing, and I go to Breitbart every day. So just because I wanted to see what people are saying in the comments section, just because I'm curious, like, how are they justifying whatever I'm thinking in my head, like, okay, how are they going to justify this one? That's my game, basically. Like, okay, this headline, there's no way that they're going to come up with a way to defend this. And then I read the comments and they have. And so that's kind of like my approach to it. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, I guess they have found a way to justify it. And then eventually you get to a point where you kind of understand where they're coming from, even if you completely think it's insane, you at least understand it. And so, yeah, I mean, I do approach politics the same way. Like, I do think can we talk about this? This subject isn't off limits, right?
By all means.
Yeah, okay. Great. Yeah, because, I mean, I do think that sometimes Democrats specifically can look down their noses at people that disagree with them a little too much, especially Trump supporters. And I am not a Trump supporter by any means. I'm not anything close to a Trump supporter. I think he's repulsive. But but I also think that I also think that it's a turnoff to people when you present yourself as if you have the answer to every problem when you clearly don't, when there are people in the country who are in serious pain, who are seriously hurting, who have, you know, seen serious loss, and you're telling them America is already great. You know what I mean? And they've experienced, like, I mean, their towns have been ravaged and, you know, businesses have been closed and people have lost their homes and are addicted to drugs and they're dying younger ages and all this stuff. So it's just so dismissive and so condescending. And so I do always try to seek out the other side, just because I don't ever want that to be me. I mean, it's tempting to fall into that sometimes, because sometimes I hear something from someone who sees something politically different than I do. And I'm like, oh God, like, you know, how can this person think this? But I try, you know, every once in a while I fall into that, but I try not to do that if I can help it.
Yeah, no, and I totally agree. But I, as you're talking, I was thought about something that I heard not super recently, but semi-recently, and I'm not able to give exact credit just because of, unfortunately, I ingest so much media that I forget where I pick up all the bits and bobs. But it was talking about debating with someone who sees it the other way, and they essentially ran some focus groups, and they said, if you're trying to push a pro-environment, you know, kind of anti-global warming stance to conservatives, you get a lot better reaction by making it about patriotism and saying, don't you want to protect America from the deteriorating environment? Don't you want to take it? You know, and that got a lot better reaction from them. And so it does come down to, it's not that they're wrong or they're bad or this and that. It's like, understanding that they have just a different morality than me. Because to me, in my head, patriotism doesn't cross my mind.
Right, and we, I think on the left, we tend to look at things like, this is racist, this is sexist, this is homophobic, and that's kind of how we approach things. And that's not really their value system. That's not to say that they are, you know, that every person who's conservative is racist, sexist, or homophobic. It's just that that's not their go-to. Whereas I think, you know, when we're offended by things on the left, that I think those are the things that we go to first. But yeah, I mean, even with environmental issues, I mean, my thought is, why don't we focus on the things that people enjoy doing in rural areas, like hunting and fishing and preserving those activities so people can do them with their children and their grandchildren? You know, that's environmentalism right there at its core. So yeah, I totally agree with you there.
Yeah, exactly. You have to stop and think about who you're talking to and where they come from and so why they see things the way that they do. And that's kind of your grounds for, you know, talking to them as a person. But, you know, as I speak about where they come from, I know that you mentioned before your background. So, you know, let's kind of get into it. Where were you born and raised, and kind of what framed your moral compass and your kind of take on the world?
Oh, boy. Well, I was born in Little Rock, Arkansas. I lived there until I was 25 years old. So, I didn't actually live in Little Rock proper that whole time. Little Rock is a city of about 175,000 people. I lived in the city until about third grade or so. And during that time, it was interesting. I I remember I was, the school that I was supposed to go to in the neighborhood that I was in had a fire, and I couldn't go to that school, and so I started getting bused across town to a completely different school. And then I brought home my class picture, and my mom said, "You've never mentioned this. How come you never told me?" And I said, "Told you what?" I was like one of two white kids in the whole class, and I had never mentioned it to her, and she couldn't believe I'd never mentioned it. And I guess, you know, now when I look back on that, I'm like, you should have been proud of that. But, you know, she was just, you know, kind of shocked that I didn't mention it, but it just, I guess, took her back a little bit. But anyway, so that, you know, that was kind of like, you know, the setting I was in until probably fourth grade. And then it was like a complete culture shock to me because we moved to a small town that was maybe 30, 35 miles south of Little Rock and maybe had like 1,000 people. There were trailer parks there that had no running water or were just getting running water for the first time. And there's a lot of extreme poverty. And I started getting bullied there quite a bit because I think it was hard for me to not be very obviously gay. I remember when I was in fourth grade, I on the first day of school, you know, because I'd never had any shame or anything, because shame is something that's instilled in you. It's not something that you feel until someone tells you that you should feel it. And when I was in fourth grade, on the first day of school, they had us write all this stuff with all of our hobbies. And I wrote out that I love to shop. And yeah, and my teacher, I remember she paused for a second and she looked at me and then she said, "You know what? I do too." And like she just kind of diffused it right then. And when I look back on that now, I'm like, you know what? She handled that perfectly because it didn't really escalate into an issue after that. But then I remember we did an activity later in the week where we had to talk about something that we learned about, you know, people that were in the class with us during the first week of school. And everybody was like, "He loves to shop." And it just became this thing that followed me around. And then like this,
well, it depends on what you're shopping for, too. People have to also realize not everyone just likes shopping for clothes. Some people like shopping for different things, you know, electronics. In my case, beer. You know, I love shopping for beer. Sorry, go on.
Yeah. Makeup. Anyway. Exactly.
See, I was going to go for those like, toys, but, you know, whatever.
So, I remember around that time I was at recess and, you know, different teachers had recess duty and the third grade teacher had recess duty and was asking kids on the playground if I was a boy or a girl. And I finally just went to her and told her that next time that she wanted to know something about me, that she should just ask me. And I can't, you know, I look back at that now. I'm like, I can't believe I just said that. But and I wasn't being confrontational. I just said, "Well, if you have a question, just ask me and I'll tell you." And then she apologized. But yeah, she was asking other kids. And I just look back at like, what a fucked up situation. But the school was really backwards. I mean, you know, I mean, I used to sometimes get spit on and have stuff thrown at me. There were a lot of cowboys there. I mean, it was just like really awful. I was there through eighth grade and then ended up at the school from ninth grade through graduation of high school. It was in a slightly bigger town. And I mean, it was actually an incredibly conservative Christian town, but because I was coming from where I was, it felt like this, like remarkable liberal Mecca, I guess, just because, you know, I was around people who bathed every day. I mean, I'm serious. I'm not exaggerating. Around people who bathed every day and who, you know, who weren't throwing things at me and who, you know, all that
spitting
kind of
at
stuff.
You
so,
or...
Exactly, exactly. So, and I was pretty much kind of left alone. I even kind of found a way to fit in because people were just, for whatever reason, you know, people were just who they were. And it was kind of like the type of Christianity where people were just really, really nice. And so I could handle that. You know, I could find my way in that. And I did. So the high school experience was actually pretty good for me. And I had made a lot of really great friends that I'm still really close to today. But, So school had some rough spots, but overall I would say, you know, once I got to be like 14 or 15 years old, it was actually great. And at home, I mean, that's, I don't know if we have enough time to go into all that. That's pretty crazy, but.
I got to ask some kind of questions to pepper in just because I'm inquisitive. That's why I like doing this kind of show.
Sure.
You said, you know, that your mom, not questioned, but was kind of taken aback that you didn't mention that you were the only white kid in the class. Do you think that part of the reason why you didn't see that, I mean, number one, it's like weird because it's not like you were the minority. So it's not like you're going to sit there and say like, oh, I'm in a class full of minorities because you were the minority as the only white person. But do you think that the reason why you didn't kind of see that or think to mention it is because you like, it's a weird thing to say, but like you were the gay kid. Do you think you were even like, would you have considered yourself gay or had a concept of that at that point?
It's not about having a concept or not having a concept. I think it's more just that it never would have occurred to me.
Okay.
Like it really is amazing how powerful denial can be. It's such a powerful thing. And it's not even so much, I mean, it's so powerful, in fact, that you don't even know that you're denying it. It's not like you're fighting off this feeling. It's that the denial is so strong that you don't even know that you're doing it. So, but I mean, when I look back, I probably knew I was gay in some form when I was like 3 or 4. But yeah, at that point, I think all that it was just that I just didn't care. I mean, because I had friends and everything was fine, and that was that, you know. So it didn't really affect me very much. It was just school, you know, and everything was fine.
Right. No, and I do get what you mean when you talk about the it's like ingrained denial, because I've always described it as not an option. It's the people where that's what it is. And one of my best friends when I was in middle school, it was like I think everybody assumed that he was gay except for him. Like he essentially told he was straight, and it just wasn't an option because his father was an ex, you know, military guy. His mom was from the Philippines, and you know, when he was stationed in the Philippines, that's when they got together. And his dad was kind of rough and gruff kind of guy. And then, you know, now as an adult, and it kind of sucks because we drifted apart as friends, and I feel like a lot of it had to do with just him kind of dealing with his stuff. Now he's, you know, out of the closet and seems to have a really, you know, fulfilling life. And it's so funny because, as I said, when we were younger, that wasn't even an option. That wasn't a choice for him in life. And as you say it for that, where it's not even, it's not that you're in denial or you're deluding yourself in any way. It's just really not something that's possible.
Right. Like saying that you're in denial implies that you're committing some type of action, and it doesn't even get to that point. I mean, that's the whole idea.
Right, exactly. Did you feel anything like that, or do you think to you, as you said, it was just so intrinsically you that was it?
I think it was just intrinsically me. I mean, most people, like, there were a lot of people I didn't even have to tell. I mean, you know, the saying was just that, I mean, I was kind of the last one to know. I mean, that's that's kind of how it was. I mean, I one of the funniest things that ever happened to me, actually, I was like in my early 20s, and I had told a few people by that point because I had accepted it about myself. I just hadn't like told like everyone in the world. But I remember I was like, okay, I can tell everyone now, because this woman came up to me at work And I had some breakfast at my desk, and she said, "That's funny. I've never seen a guy eat yogurt before." And I said, "Okay, now I can tell everyone."
I've just never seen a guy shop for yogurt before.
Yeah.
Eating plenty of yogurt. Never seen a guy shop for yogurt.
Jeez. That's a weird one. And I eat yogurt, so I'm a little, I don't know.
Yeah. I love yogurt. Yogurt's great.
Maybe I'm more metropolitan.
I know, that's what I was thinking. I was like, I've seen guys eat yogurt before, but anyway, the fact that she thought it was unique that I was a guy and I was eating yogurt made me think, okay, I can let everyone know.
Still very strange of her to just say that to you. Very, very forward of her to just come up to you and say that. Like, because how does she know that you're just a regular straight guy and she's saying that to you? You know what I mean? Like, she could have been wrong, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, it didn't sound like she had judgment that way, right? She was just saying it was a rare
but
thing
do,
that
do
she
you,
saw.
Do you get why someone would take it the wrong way, though? You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I think she was saying it pretty innocently. She was just really aloof. That was just her personality. And she said things all the time where she didn't realize how they sounded, and that just was one of them. So I knew not to, like, be bothered by it, but it was funny to me because when she said it was just my clue. Okay, no point in, like, even pretending for anyone anymore.
Yeah,
if you can't even, if you don't even, if you're not even able to buy straight groceries, then at that point you need to just give up, right?
Straight
groceries. Well, I mean, you would be amazed at the number of things people pick up on. Like, when I even remember in eighth grade, people were like, "Have you noticed that you hold your books the way a girl holds her books?"
How does a girl hold her books? Against her
and
chest?
And I was like, "What are you talking about?" And they were like, "Well, a girl holds her books with her elbow up, or with her arm up, rather, extended toward her chest, holding her books up. And a boy holds his book with his arm down, with his books kind of, like, just to his side."
Well, between the armpit, and, right?
What's that?
Or underneath the armpit, right? Like, you kind of hold it between your arm and your body, sort of. Is that?
Yeah, your arm and your hip.
Right.
Yeah,
okay.
Like,
okay.
Kind of like that. Yeah, and you just kind of hold it down. And someone asked me if I was gay based on that.
Huh.
So, I mean, just the things that people observe and ask questions about people, it's just amazing.
Yeah, see, I thought it was going to be that boys hold their books with an inflated sense of self-worth while women don't hold books at all because they shouldn't be reading.
Exactly.
Jeez. So I kind of want to, like, move on from the topic, but I want to get into, I guess, a little bit further. So you get into high school, things feel better. I'm assuming from there, do you go into a college that's in an even bigger city, or do you kind of stay in the smaller town area?
The number one criteria for college for me was that I was as far away from my family as possible. So that was what I was looking for in a school first and foremost. And so the farthest I could get away from them was like 3 hours at the time that I could realistically do it. So that's, you know, I was still in Arkansas, but I was like 3 hours away. Razorbacks, I'm sure you know, University of Arkansas, that's where I was. So, and I was actually just there for like a year. So I actually only have 1 year of college, but because I had no real guide for financial aid or anything. And, you know, at that point, they're telling you that there's an expected contribution from your parents. And I did not have parents that were willing to contribute, which is a story in itself. But yeah. So anyway, I couldn't financially continue at that point. And because I had, like, made really stupid decisions, because I got all these credit card offers my freshman year and decided to take them all and max them all out, like, I couldn't qualify for any loans either. So I just screwed myself too. So, so I had to just, like, figure something else out and enter the workforce and go in a different direction. But everything worked out okay in the end. It's just that I took an odd path.
I can't believe those credit card companies didn't go back through and interview some of your kindergarten classmates, because they could have let them know that you love to shop.
Yeah.
You were a credit risk.
I mean, there you go.
You should have been a little aware.
To tie this back to wrestling, the cool thing was that the Visa, like the first Visa card that I had, they actually sent me checks for the credit card, which I thought was awesome because I wrote a check to a website that had all these bootleg VHS tapes. This was 1998, and it, like, tapes back then were like, you know, you get like a 4 or 6 hour tape, and it was like $18. Like, it was ridiculous. And I got like 40 tapes, and it cost me something like $400 or whatever. And so that's how I maxed out my credit card. So I didn't get to finish college because I ordered VHS wrestling tape.
Wow.
Yeah, my priorities in life are really strong.
Yeah. Well, from, as you said, from there, things kind of worked out, and you know ended up with a decent career path, I would assume. And I mean, did you end up now, would you say, I don't know if you want to give away exactly where you live, but would you say now you live in a bigger city where people are more accepting and they're not giving you any trouble in that regard?
Yeah, I'm happy to talk about that. So I, when I was 25, I moved to New Jersey. I moved from Arkansas to like the Franklin Park, New Brunswick area, kind of like near Princeton, kind of in that area. Lived there for about 5 years, got a job with a pharmaceutical company, and really like enjoyed that job. Like I found a path for myself, like to advance in the company, and did really well there. Stayed there for 8 years. I only stopped recently, I guess it's been about 3 years now. We moved to Chicago in 2010, and I still live in Chicago now. So we've lived in Chicago for about 7 years, and I'm married. We have 2 children, both of them we had through surrogacy. We used an anonymous egg donor, and it's pretty cool how we set it up. So basically we use the same egg donor, so both of our children have a blood relation to each other.
Oh.
But we used my sperm for one and his sperm for one. So one of them has a biological relationship to him and one to me. So
that's really cool, by the way. Just from a scientific standpoint, that's amazing that we can even do that. But sorry, go on. I just wanted to say
No. That was it. So yeah, so we're very happy. The oldest one is 3 and the youngest one is 2. So we have our hands full, but our family is complete. So
that's cool.
Yeah, it's just crazy around here all the time.
Yeah, so, and sorry. I was gonna wait until maybe we're offline because I didn't know if you wanted to say, but the pictures that I've seen of your family just warms my heart. You guys are such a beautiful family. So it's really awesome that you guys were able to put that together. And I worked in a fertility pharmacy because I work in pharmacy. Before I worked where I was at now, I worked in a fertility pharmacy. So sometimes it's nice to see what we were able to produce, like what was actually all that work that I was doing that at times felt like I wanted to rip my hair out, what actually good things came from it. But I think I interrupted Adrian there. So
no, I was just going to say, so surrogacy, the only thing I know about it, and you're going to laugh at this, is from watching It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia where D acts as a surrogate for a couple. And I'm assuming if it's an anonymous person, that means you just send out your sperm samples and then later on you just get a baby somewhere down the line, or
that would be traditional surrogacy. This was a gestational surrogacy, which means that the surrogate is not the egg donor. So basically the egg is being harvested outside of her body and then it's implanted in her.
Where does the egg come from?
The egg is there's a separate egg donor. So the egg donor and the surrogate are 2 different people.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so then we do a transfer of the egg to the surrogate when the surrogate's determined. So it is 2 different people. So
that's interesting.
Yeah, so the surrogate is carrying an egg that's not her egg.
Okay.
And that was the case in both cases. So we actually had 2 different surrogates that we worked with.
See, I didn't even know that that was a I thought you would have to just get the egg from the same person that's going to carry the baby to term. I didn't even know that you could get a different egg and put it in someone else. That's crazy to me. That's in a good way. That's fascinating.
Yeah. The reason that they do that is because of the legal issues.
Right.
I mean, you could still do that. It's just that when you do that, it does get complicated because, I mean, she can sign, you can sign whatever contracts and whatever statements that you want, but at the end of the day, I mean, that child is still the biological child of the surrogate, and the surrogate can still contest anything, you know, no matter what she
Right.
signs. So most people don't do surrogacies like that at this point.
That's wow, interesting. That's
Yeah.
you should have saved that for the last. No, I'm just kidding. That's crazy though.
Yeah, that, I mean, that does bring us to, I guess, a break, and then maybe we can come back and dive a little bit deeper into some less, I guess, specifics and more general stuff about you.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Voice of Ring of Honor's Kevin Kelly here. I just want to make sure you're all subscribed to all of our great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. Now, it's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search for and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Feed, Place to Be Nation Pop Feed, Pro Wrestling Only Feed, and of course, the Kevin Kelly Show Feed, which includes the full archives of my podcast. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And of course, as always, enjoy all the great action of Ring of Honor Wrestling and everything presented to you on PlaceToBeNation.com.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rezero here, and I want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com, and we offer them to you across two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast with our famous vintage vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with the smash hit Clotheslines and Headlines, our steady veteran main event, and the beloved monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on all pro wrestling super shows. Relive wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse, the always contentious Dangerous Alliance podcast, and Survey Says, a fun look back at the good, bad, and ugly of WCW. On our very popular Place of Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, NBA Team, Lucha Undead, Geek and Sassy, and a veritable podcast heaven for comic fans with hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both of those feeds on iTunes and rate and leave feedback for us as well. All of these shows plus others available at PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on the right-hand side of our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
All right, well, we're back, and Charles Loss, I wanted to talk to you kind of about the project that you're working on now, but also in a more kind of overview of projects you've worked on in general in regards to it. So you're doing PWO 2K, which is the kind of reviewing the 2000s, and I mean, it's a really thorough deep dive, right?
Yes, very much so, yeah.
What got you started on doing it? And, I mean, as I said, in general, do you think that this is a... I mean, it's not. I just know it's not. But, I mean, is it kind of a departure? Just how large and just how big of an undertaking it is, you know what I mean? Like, or would you say it kind of is the same as, say, the 90s sets or the 80s sets and stuff like that?
It's... Well, I think if you look at the 80s and then the 90s and then the 2000s, the 90s are bigger than the 80s, and then the 2000s are bigger than the 90s. That's probably the path that's been followed. So, because the 90s, I mean, you're basically looking at 120 hours per year, and that includes matches and promos and angles and everything. So, you're looking at like usually 200 to 250 matches a year. And then, you know, a lot of like, well, not even just angles and promos, but like funny, like little blurbs and commercials and things that kind of capture the absurdity of the time period mixed in as well. So just anything that's of interest that says, okay, this is wrestling in 1990 or this is wrestling in 95 right here. So that's kind of what we were going for. And the way that this differs is that this is just match-based. And there are a couple of reasons for that. Number one, we wanted to go on a deeper dive because this isn't, you know, we were putting those on physical disc, and so space was an issue. This is more of like a cloud thing, so it's not, you know, we're just, that's one of the cool things about technology, so we don't have to worry so much about that. But also, I think at a certain point between the 90s and the 2000s, I don't think it necessarily happened like right at the turn of the decade, but I think somewhere along the way, the match became a lot more important than the angle or the interview. And so I think you can, focusing on the matches from 2000 to 2009 is going to focus on what's more important. Whereas I think you really needed to focus on everything in the 90s to paint a complete picture. But also, okay, here's the other thing. The 90s had a lot more consolidation. And then you get into 2000s and you have All Japan splitting and Noah forming. You have all of the Japanese indies splitting off. So FMW folded and they had all these clones that formed. You had Toramon forming and then, you know, all the Dragon Gate spinoffs and all of that. In the U.S., you had the indie boom, which I can't even count the number of independents that there were that were had footage in the 2000s. It's ridiculous. I seem to still uncover more every time that I turn around, and I've been, you know, researching this for almost 2 years now. So I think the focus on matches is the right approach because I'm not really looking to just see, okay, this was a match of the year, this was a match of the year. I really am genuinely interested in seeing, like, the run-of-the-mill stuff, too, just because I want to see what an average match looked like from someone like a Chris Hero or a Bryan Danielson or a CM Punk, just as much as I want to see what their best stuff looked like.
And so you talked about, I mean, you talked about a lot of different stuff there, really, but there's a lot of different things I want to get into, I guess. So do you think just availability of footage is a big playing factor of why the sets just tend to get bigger and bigger?
That is part of it, absolutely. Because, I mean, that's absolutely part of it, because even comparing the 80s to the 90s, there were far more promotions in the 80s. So it's not just that. I mean, there are more promotions in the 2000s than the 90s. There are more promotions in the 80s than the 90s, but there's more footage in the 2000s than the 80s. You see what I mean? So I think it is a matter of footage to a certain extent, but in the 80s, the difference was that most of your long matches took place on house shows, and most of the TV matches were either joined in progress or they were short studio matches that were like 8 to 10 minutes, and then that was it. So there were exceptions to that, but there weren't a huge number of exceptions to that. That's it.
Okay.
So I think that's the big difference. It's just the length of the matches and yes, footage availability too.
And how, I mean, I'm sorry for not knowing your complete history and everything, but how involved were you, if at all, in any kind of, say, 60s, 70s set viewing and stuff like that? Were you ever involved in anything like that?
I've seen a lot of that stuff, but I really was never involved in like footage finding or compiling it or anything like that. Probably in like 2007, 2008-ish, maybe somewhere in there, I watched a lot of it. I think I may have posted about a lot of it. I wouldn't stand by a word of what I said back then now because I have no idea what I even said. but yeah, I did watch probably not all of it, but a big chunk of it back then from All Japan and New Japan, and I think some IWE. The number of complete matches outside of the U.S., outside of Japan, are pretty limited unless you go into World of Sport, which I haven't watched very much of, admittedly.
Okay. And the reason why I was going to ask is just because you talked about the 2000s being a switch into the promos don't matter as much, but I almost wanted to question to say if it wasn't necessarily that it changed to being promos being less important, but that the 90s were more of an aberration of their own, where the promos and the outside gaga was more popular and more important at the time in the in-ring product. Because, I mean, if you compare 90s, even just the big dog, you talk about WWF, that was what was popular, and a lot of people were mimicking that. It really wasn't about the wrestling. Do you think that would be fair to say? I mean, a lot of times, the majority of the story, there'd be important promos and angles, but a lot of the times, from everything I've seen, 60s, 70s, 80s, the majority of the story was being told in the ring.
Yes and no. I think if you look at one promotion, especially one American promotion, that's probably true. But if you look at wrestling as a whole, I think the 90s is when everything converged in a way where no matter what you like, you're going to find something that works for you. So that's and that's really what I got from the 90s. So, like, for example, you might see, like, if you're watching everything kind of chronologically in 93, for example, you're going to see the WWF doing what they do. You're going to see WCW doing what they do. But you're also going to see Smoky Mountain Wrestling, which is kind of like a 70s, 80s throwback, next to ECW, which is emerging into what it will be, next to All Japan Women, which has its own thing going, and All Japan and New Japan, and which have their own distinct styles. So, I mean, that's the thing. Like, you have room for all the old school angles next to these new styles that are emerging, next to, I didn't even mention Lucha Libre, but, you know, AAA was doing some new things during that time too. So, to me, the 90s are the time when you get kind of the best of both worlds, because you do get all of, like, the cool new angles. Even, like, in the late 90s, you get, like, you know, the cool, like, NWO stuff and some of the stuff that just feels really fresh next to some of the classic matches, even if they're coming more from, like, Japan or from Mexico. If you're viewing them all, like, globally, you're getting it all side by side.
Yeah, and thank you for bringing up Mexico, because we don't need Stephen Graham calling us racist. former guest of the show, Stephen Graham, I should say.
Hey, we're going to build a wall around him, Tim, and he's going to pay for it.
Well, he is in Canada. I guess my point more was, and I mean, it's treated that way, obviously, because of the Attitude Era and the histrionics of WWE, that they in some ways create the culture and the history of what pro wrestling is. My question was more, did it turn into promos and other stuff was less important? It switched in the 2000s, or was it, I guess what I'm saying is, it wasn't something new. Would you say that it was a return to form and that the 90s just kind of stood out? I feel like you kind of said that there, but maybe didn't frame it that way. Or do you think I'm crazy for seeing it that way?
No, I understand. Yes, I think the key turning point there is when matches started going through commercial breaks again, which was probably, I think the first time that happened was in the Benoit Jericho push in 2001, which was brief, like in like early summer. And then it didn't happen again until like the brand extension in 2002. And then it's been a staple ever since then. So I think that that's really when you started to see the difference, because the matches were given more time. Like almost immediately you started seeing 15, 20, 30 minute matches on TV semi-regularly, you know, not necessarily on every single show, but regularly enough that you could say that it was a staple. But whereas before that, you know, you may see a main event get 10 to 12 minutes, but nothing else.
Right. Okay. And so kind of my angle on even talking about the projects was to talk about, do you throw this kind of effort and this kind of completist passion into other parts of your life, all parts of your life, or is it just pro wrestling?
I tend to throw it into all parts of my life, and so a lot of stuff that I want to do never gets off the ground because of it, so it sometimes works to my detriment. My iTunes is a disaster. I can't even tell you the number of times that I've started on my iTunes with the goal of like reorganizing it and getting like all the artists and titles and everything consistent. And then like I get through like the letter A So like A is like the cleanest, like all the artists that start with A, that's like the cleanest, most perfect, like all the artwork is there, like everything is perfect. And then you get to B and it's just like a complete disaster from there on. Lots of duplicates, and some things are capitalized and some things are lowercase and so on. So yeah, I have a tendency to take on more than I can handle. That's just who I am. I've always done that at work. I've always done that at home. And then just figure out a way to make as much of it work as I can. That's just how I do things. And sometimes I'm able to pull it off and sometimes I'm not, but you know, with wrestling stuff, you know, I guess I even surprised myself that I got through the yearbooks, and but that tells me that PWO 2K is going to work out. You know, it may take a long time. I have a feeling, you know, it's going to take a good 5 or 6 years, but it's going to happen, you know, at some point. But yeah, music, absolutely. I remember when my daughter was born a couple of years ago, and my sleep was all like fucked up around the clock. The way that I was, you know, handling, you know, the pockets where I couldn't sleep and I was just kind of awake at like 4 a.m. or whatever, I was just going on YouTube and comparing and listening to stuff that I saw on the site. Have you heard of acclaimedmusic.net?
No.
Which
oh
one?
Oh my gosh. You have to go to that site.
What
if
is
you're
it?
A music fan at all. I'm telling everyone about this. If you're listening to the show, go to acclaimedmusic.net.
Acclaimed?
Basically, yes. The guy has an algorithm that averages every critics list almost ever and gives you like recommended based on that algorithm. He gives you like an, you know, the average of everything. He gives you recommended albums and songs for every year from like 1900 to the present.
So
it's insane.
Can you like put in like a band that you like and it'll tell you similar bands that you might also really enjoy?
Yes. Yes. It even gives you the top 6,000 songs of all time and the top 5,000 albums of all time.
I'm on it right now. This looks pretty interesting.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. But anyway, like that's how I kept myself occupied when she was born and my sleep patterns were all destroyed. Was I went through that site and identified all the songs that I liked that I had never heard.
Nice.
And yeah, and so all the stuff got added, and now I have no idea what's what. So that's just story of my life.
So I guess so. Yeah. So you do put that much into it, but how important is it to you to put down your opinions, put down your reviews, put everything down there for people to see and find? Because, I mean, you know, I see you talked about how many matches are reviewed on Pro Wrestling Only, but you know, they're not all. That's not all you. Because I feel like you are in that, you know, top percentile of wrestling footage viewer, and I'd hate for, you know, the knowledge and everything that you have to just disappear. So what are you doing to kind of put it together so people can easily access your opinions on all this stuff?
Really, all that I've done, I mean, that's a good question. All that I've really done at this point is post it, and, you know, I'll tweet a link to whatever I've posted. Do you think I should be doing something more than that?
No, I'm wondering if that's important to you in this project, because to me it feels like it should be. As someone who's watching so much and really cataloging it and comparing it so in depth, like it would be nice to have something. I mean, you guys are doing the podcasts, you're doing the posts on the match, but I mean, is the end goal to have, you know, a top 100 matches of the 2000s? You know, is that something that you're interested in putting together?
Okay, so basically, at the end of every year, we are going to do a top 100 matches of each year. And then at the end of the decade, we're going to do a 500. So we are going to do that. But to answer your question, I think it would be valuable to have some type of centralized list that was searchable and indexed and all of that. So I just would need a tool that can make that happen, and I have no idea what that would be. So if anyone's listening that knows how to make that happen, I'm all ears.
Yeah, please. I mean, you know, that's the issue. It's like, you know, stuff gets lost in time just because of people not knowing how to use what they can do to have it be saved. And, you know, it's the idea of oral traditions never getting written down. So they miss that jump in technology. And then, you know, some records that never got digitized, they just miss the jump in technology to the next format. And it's kind of like, this is the stuff that we don't necessarily want it to miss that the next jump. But then I guess that was my next question. I was thinking about it earlier, and I kind of like talked myself back into it because I had forgotten it, which is, is there a next jump, and is there a way to do a PWO 2K10? You know what I mean? Is the footage too available and everyone has streaming services and everyone's watching everything from the 2010s that project is null and void, unimportant? Or do you think that there would be a reason to do something like that, you know, 20 years down the line, let's say?
I think we'll see where we are. I think that hindsight is always 20/20. I think that when you step away from something, you tend to get better reactions to it. And the reason is because you're not so wrapped up in who's winning and who's losing. You don't get quite as emotional about the booking decisions, or, you know, you're just more looking at the match itself. And to clarify, what I don't mean by that is that that's how all wrestling should be watched, in kind of that detached way, because that's not really how wrestling is meant to be watched. I'm just referring to, like, if you're watching trying to get a sense of how good something is. But if you're just watching for enjoyment, of course, like, those moments are what you live for. But I think there's always value in looking back at something. Like, even, you know, by the time that we finish PWO 2K, if someone wants to go back and look at what I wrote about the 90s and say how crazy I am, I think that there's value in that even. Just because I feel like all of this stuff lives and breathes. Like, no opinion is etched in stone. There is no truth, basically. There's just, this is what I think right now. And it's valid right now.
Okay. I mean, yeah, I like it. I want to continue talking to you for about 6 or 7 more hours, but I cannot keep you. So what we're going to do is take one more break, and then when we're going to come back, I think what we're going to do is the final question. What do you think, Adrian?
Sounds great, Tim. Let's do it.
The PWO PTBN feed has changed its name, now known simply as Pro Wrestling Only, so it should be easier to find and indeed to say. All of your favorite shows are still here, including Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, This Week in Wrestling, and many, many more, including our full archives of tremendous content. So make sure you subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only feed today.
Okay, all right, we're back. Tim, before we do your final question, I have a final question of my own. This goes for both of you guys. What's your guys' white whale? What's a wrestling match that maybe you guys saw when you were a kid or something that you've searched long and hard on Google or torrent sites and you haven't been able to find? Do you guys have a white whale? And if so, what is it?
Oh, geez. I mean, for me, not really.
No?
There is some Southern California stuff that I think me and Loss have even actually talked about looking for. It's stuff that I may or may not have seen when I was younger. Stuff that I had downloaded illegally at times, and I'm not the saver catalog guy, so I don't keep it. So, you know, refinding some of that stuff, but I'm not a white whale guy, so I don't think about it in terms of, oh, I can't wait to see it. But I guarantee Lost probably has a better answer.
As far as stuff that I've seen that I haven't been able to see again, probably not. But in terms of stuff that I know that's out there, okay, WCW was notorious for showing clips of matches on television that they taped from live events, and you know that they have them, but they never released them or showed them in full or anything like that. They were notorious for that. So I know that somewhere in the WWE library, there are a ton of unreleased house show matches from WCW, and I want WWE to put together a series of never before released matches and put it out regularly instead of coming up with all these like original series like Holy Foley and all that stuff. Like, I'd rather them just do something with their actual vault. But But that, so that, I guess that would be my white whale, to see them. Like, I'll give you an example. They had, they did a Hotline commercial that had clips of a Flair Steamboat match in the Omni in March of 89 that has never seen the light of day. It's, we've never seen clips of it anywhere except for in that Hotline commercial and in an ad for Clash 6 that aired on TV. And that's it. That's it. That's the only time we've ever seen it on TV, but it was professionally filmed, and we know that they have it. So where is it?
You said live matches. Do you mean like they were aired live and then they just never re-aired them again, or do you mean they were just matches that were taped but they weren't aired at all to begin with? Or
meaning that they were house show matches that they taped that they just never aired.
Never released
commercially. During a time period, obviously, where the house show matches were of greater importance, so you were more likely to get, like, you know, a match of the year candidate on a house show than you were on television.
All right. Right. Well, that's all I had. So, Tim, I think it's time for your final question.
Yes, I believe it is time for the final question. So we'll go ahead and do it. Loss, my final question here, and I know I've kind of slipped back and forth between calling you Loss and calling you Charles, but, you know, it's nice to have weird continuity.
Can we put Charles in charge of this show?
We can try. He is in charge of the board, so in some ways he is
Charles,
the master and the ruler of our universe. The final question, Charles, someone who only knows you from the sporadic podcast appearances that you've done, from your posts on the board, what would be something that would be shocking for them to find out about you?
I don't know how shocking this would be, but I'll share a crazy story. So one time, I was about 20 years old, and I had just worked up the courage to actually try to start dating, and I was chatting with someone online, and he was like, okay, like, here's where I live or whatever, just come by, and, you know, and then we'll go somewhere. And I said, okay. So I did, and this was at, like, maybe 10:30 at night. It was like late because he said he had to work and he was getting off late, and I was like, okay. So someone, it was a very small street, and there were only like two or three houses, even though it was kind of a long street. And he told me that his house was like kind of situated in someone else's, where it looked like it was someone else's backyard, but it was actually a house. And so I'm trying to go to it. It turns out that this was all just like some sick joke that someone wanted to see if someone would do. And the guy who lived in the house came outside with his gun and was like, do you need something? And I was like, no, I do not. And I said, I was looking for, and I told him the name I was looking for. We don't have anyone here by that name. I suggest you get out of here. And I said, I am happy to leave right now. And like all of a sudden, other lights started turning on the street and people were coming out and staring at me.
Oh,
and yeah. And I hightailed it. Like, dogs started barking and all this stuff. Like, I was scared to death.
Oh, and, man.
Yeah. And well, I don't
think what was the next thing you heard?
Yeah. And when I asked him about it the next day, I was like, so what was that? Like, you know, and he was like, I just wanted to see what you would do. So, like, fuck you. And I'm like, hey, wait a second. Like, what did you don't get to say fuck you to me after that.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much it.
That's messed
so
up.
That's the time that I, and every once in a while I'm like, oh my gosh, I almost
where
died.
Where was this, by the way? What city and state were you living in at the time?
That was in Benton, Arkansas, which is kind of the armpit of Little Rock.
I thought Little Rock was already the armpit of Arkansas, but there's a different armpit.
This is like the
the Gooch of Arkansas. Yeah.
Something like that, yeah. Yeah, it's pretty bad. And
How old are you now?
Not a good place to die.
And so you were 20 years old. How old are you right now?
I'm 37.
Okay. So this is a while ago for That's crazy, though.
Yeah, yeah, this is a while ago. But every once in a while, that crosses my mind. Like, my life could have ended that night, you know? But that's the only time I've ever had a gun pulled on me. So so I consider that.
You know, it's funny because most people would think, oh, like, someone pulled a gun on you. That's pretty normal. But any other country in the world that's, at least in the Western society, would say, yeah, that's crazy that someone even had a gun to pull on you to begin with. But here in the States, it's perfectly normal, I guess.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways.
Yeah, happens all the time.
Jeez.
So, yeah, also after Adrian asks you to just rudely asks you for your age, I also have to ask you your blood type,
social security number,
height, eye color. No, I'm joking around, but it is normally we let you go. But we're going to go into extra innings for just one final extra bonus question, just because I want to stretch out our time together as much as possible here. There's Arkansas, and there's also Kansas. Who's wrong? Which one is wrong?
Neither should exist.
That's true.
So they're both wrong. How about that?
Perfect. That's the correct answer. Thank you so much, Charles. If there's anything you wanted to plug?
My computer. It's about to die.
Perfect. Well, I'll plug for you the PWO2K podcast. You guys are doing it for each month that you get through. First episode is the only one that's came out so far, but it's great. So we're all waiting with bated breath for the second episode. I would definitely recommend, if you haven't listened to the first one, go out there and listen to it. And otherwise, go to the board, read everything that's going on with the project, get involved, watch the matches, write on the review threads, all that. Adrian, anything you needed to plug?
Follow me at Del the Boots on Twitter. Follow our show at Lucha Undead. Follow my other podcast at Story Germ. And that's it, Tim.
Fantastic. I've got a new episode of We'll Do It Live coming out very soon. I just recorded it. I'm being lazy about editing it because I actually put effort into editing that show, so it takes a while, and I don't even want to get started. So that should be coming out within a week or two.
Perfect.
Otherwise, we got This Week in Wrestling reviewing great shows over there constantly with Pete. And he's got Pete also has Space City, the other show that I edit and I don't put effort into, which is kind of the spiritual successor to Titans of Wrestling. So if you're listening to this and you miss Titans of Wrestling and you haven't given Space City a shot, give it a shot. You got Johnny, you got Pete. It's kind of the rhythm section of the Titans. And they're coming together reviewing matches from the kind of the NWA Houston office, which is, you know, a lot of fantastic stuff there. Otherwise, as always, you know that everything in life is about the three B's. It's the good beers, the good buds, and the good banter. Good night, everyone.